I'm going to be, again, in the book of Proverbs for a title. I've been playing around with this, and it might come out something like this. Keep strong wisdom and discretion. So that's the verse. Proverbs, 3rd chapter, 21st verse. Get there myself. And I want to go back, well, people maybe need a little time to do this. Going back actually to the 19th verse. The Lord by wisdom has founded the earth, by understanding hath he established the heavens. By knowledge the depths are broken up, the clouds drop down the dew. By wisdom, by understanding. The world that we have is exactly that. Based on his, everything was done with wisdom. And it says in several different places in the book of Proverbs, and the reason for repetition that we don't forget. It's important we don't forget. But you stop and think about it. When he did everything with wisdom, that means wisdom must be important. Jesus, when he walked upon the face of the earth, did everything in wisdom. God created, when he created everything was done just exactly right. Our bodies, for example. God created them so we needed certain things to eat, certain nutrition to do the things God had us to do. This was important. And so we should then follow those directions. As far as what we're doing in this life, we should be following, and God should be all important in all of this. Now, let's go to the actual verse. And this may be all, I'm going to actually read down to the 26th verse. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to get anywhere near close to the end of it. It may take, for the most part, the whole time, just in this first verse. My son, let not them depart from thine eyes. Keep sound wisdom and discretion. And by the way, that is the actual title. I may have given you the wrong word. The title of this, keep sound wisdom and discretion, is what it should have been. Sorry. Now, verse 22. So shall they be life unto thy soul and grace to thy neck. Then shall thou walk in thy way safely, and thy foot shall not stumble. When thou liest down, thou shalt not be afraid. And really quickly right here, how many people are afraid today because they're not? Yea, thou shalt lie down, and thy sleep shall be sweet. Be not afraid of sudden fear, neither of the desolation of the wicked when it cometh. For the Lord shall be thy confidence and shall keep thy foot from being taken. But notice the important thing is in this, when we're talking about be not afraid, remember when we're talking about using wisdom. Be not afraid because of the wisdom you are using, the understanding that you are using. That's what matters. And wisdom was extremely important. From here, we're going to the book of Deuteronomy, and we're going to catch about three different places rather close together. We're going to start with the 4th chapter. Deuteronomy 4, 4th chapter, 6th verse. Nope, that's not what I thought it was going to be. Okay, back up 6th chapter, 4th verse. I got those two combined wrong. Sorry, folks. Anyway, okay. I can't remember exactly where I put it, but anyway, this much I do know. as far as what I was looking for. It's talking about the wisdom and how, and talking about them been giving the oracles of God. And this is something I was watching a video of a sermon which was done over in Arkansas last some weekend. And the question he asked, you know, what is the most important part of our lives? What is the most important? What do we have? What advantage do we have over other people? And there's only one thing. And it's way beyond everything else. That's the oracles of God. I mean, in his sermon, he was talking about, he was asking a question like, if you were permitted to be there when the Egyptians got drowned on the Red Sea and the Israel came through, would you like to see that? But you see, that's not as important as the Word of God. And so it is. So that was basically the point. And the fact he says, who is as wise, you know, thinking the others would look at it and notice that they have all these laws and instructions on how to live properly, how to live wisely. By having all these things, people would consider them to be wise. And that's the purpose of the law, is to give you wisdom. To teach you what is right. Because what God does, as I mentioned, he did everything the right way. He did it with wisdom. And so are we to be. And sometimes it gets rather detailed. But in verse 4 of chapter 6. Hear, O Israel, the Lord thy our God is one Lord. And thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy might. This is a great commandment. To be wise. And how do we do this? Well, let's read on and see. And these words which I command thee this day shall be in thine heart. Keep them in your heart. Keep them in your mind. He goes on to say, how? Because if you look there at the end of the sixth verse, you see a colon there. That means what's following is describing what is coming before. And thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and shall talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. And thou shalt bind them for a sign upon thy hand, and they shall be as frontlets unto thy eyes. And it shall be, and thou shalt write them upon the posts of thy house and upon thy gates. You see, this is the importance part. We have the oracle of God, the most important part. But we are to concentrate ourselves in that. And here's why. It goes from Jesus' statement. The importance. Okay. Talk about the treasures. Our treasures. What is it that we, I was talking about what is the most important. Our treasures are what we classify as the most important. And if you want to know where a person's treasures lie, all you have to do is listen. Because out of your heart, you know, where your treasures lie is where your heart's going to be. And out of the abundance of that comes the words you speak. And as Brother Carl mentioned on similarly, and actually mentioning that particular thing in another one of his sermons, Elder Carl Staten from Northwest Arkansas, says, you know, sometimes it reveals more than we might want people to know. We need to remember that part. But it's important to understand that what we consider the most important. That if we don't, you know, if we say we love God, but where is the proof? What do we do on a daily basis as far as loving God is concerned? Now, I used to think when I started reading the Bible on a regular basis, you know, maybe 15, 20, 30 minutes, 30 minutes, I'd be, you know, how much is that loving God? If my mind is on everything else the rest of the time, that's not exactly what this says here. Talk of them when thou sittest down in thy house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. And I might put it in there on a side statement here, and when you finish a communion service. Now, where did that come from? Well, this is exactly where it came from. I remember one weekend, I was in Champaign, I was in college, and I was there for the communion service. And after communion, and it was a wonderful communion, a solemn communion service. And guess what they were talking about within 10, 15 minutes of when that service ended? Like I said, out of the mouth of the, you know, out of your mouth, your heart speaketh. They were talking about the weather. What was most important to them? The weather? You know, this steps on my toes just a little bit more than a lot. It's only been recently that I've actually taken the time of spending a couple of hours in the Bible. Basically about every evening. You know, I just sort of set aside that time. And I listen to sermons and so forth. I've just started doing that. It would have been a lot more enjoyable if I had been doing that more often. See, when it says talk about these things, I've learned that I used to love the CBS lineup on Sunday night, but I don't have to watch that now. I have more important things now. And it just, you know, like I say, sometimes you wonder, why would God put up with me? And yet, again, like I said, because he loves me. That's hard to fathom. It really is. But always doing it, regardless where you're at, it should be all the time. Even when I'm doing my technical writing, God's got to have a part in that if I'm going to do it right. You know, and being concerned that in that particular case that I put things down so people will understand what I'm talking about, so they can follow what I've said. If you do this, this, and this, then this is what happens, to make sure that's what happens. That's all part of it. Doing it as unto the Lord, I think, is an appropriate way of putting it, because that's what's in the Bible. That's how we are to do things. To bind them for a sign upon thine hand and frontlets between thine eyes. Now, you have to be careful sometimes, because people are known to do things literally. The phylacteries that Jesus speaks of, that was on their garments. There was the word. Well, I've got things I've got written on my computer screen. And I could probably tell you pretty much what's there, but do I pay attention to it when I'm looking at the computer screen? And the answer is no. Then what good is it? And one of them is talking about the fact that be careful who I'm judging, because I'm judging is not my line of business. And that's basically what that particular short poem is all about. It says, don't judge when... You know, as if that was what you're supposed to do. It's not, that's God's job. And God's purpose for us is to have this in a relationship with him in which we have the joys, the inheritance of the kingdom. That's what it's all about in this life. And that is for us as long as we live here. Now, I will put it this way. I understand that that's only an earnest of that inheritance. But see, I like to play a little mind games with my math and think about just how valuable is heaven. What kind of value could you put on it? And there is none. Because it's way beyond that. So, even a small part of that is how much? Yeah, a whole lot. We really can't even measure it. As we should say in mathematics, if you divide infinity by any number, you still get infinity. I mean, it's beyond imagination. And I've learned this from personal experience. That's the truth. It amazes me when I look on these things. And it has amazed me ever since by listening to some of these ministers, I learned, hey, now I know what everything that I wrote down that those of you who have read it, read. I understand what all this is telling me. These are the inheritances I have. These are the things God has blessed me with. And I know it's going to be there. And I know there's more out there. I saw like the Queen of Sheba. I mean, they got that she was snooty. I mean, she thought she thought Solomon was a nobody. She heard all these great things about him. And she decided, yeah, this is an imposter. And so she goes there with a huge 110 camel train with all kinds of gifts for him to show him up. He gets there and he starts leading around, explaining things to her. And suddenly you realize half the things she heard, you know, what she heard compared to what she saw wasn't even half as much. Now, I guess I'm a little bit like Queen Sheba in a sense. Well, again, because I understand large number concepts, I want to see how much of this I can get. I know there's always hardships because you're not going to be otherwise. You're going to be hardship, but there's going to be blessings. And I don't care if it is hardships. I want the blessings to go with it. I can put up with the hardships. Because I know very well God will be there and make sure that I do get through it. I'm not worried about that. But that's the way it goes, you see. Anyway, let me get back to some other things. But that's just an example. Okay, we'll go over two more chapters. Chapter 8. And begin with the first verse. Make it easy because about a page or two. All the commandments which I command thee this day shall ye observe to do, that ye may live and multiply and go in and possess the land which the Lord sware unto your fathers. And thou shalt remember all the ways which the Lord thy God led thee these 40 years in the wilderness, to humble thee and to prove thee, to know what was in thine heart, whether thou wouldest keep his commandments or no. And he humbled thee, and suffered thee to hunger, and fed thee with manna which thou knewest not. Neither did thy fathers know, that he might make thee know that man doth not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of the Lord doth man live. And I like, in that last verse, I like how they put in those last three words to emphasize, doth man live. Now when Jesus was talking to Satan, because you see, this was when he was out in the desert for 40 days and 40 nights, and the Satan came him and already been bugging him for 40 days, and then it got really serious. Jesus is hungry. Jesus is thirsty. His body was crying out for that, and he says, you know, if you're the Son of God, just command that these stones be made bread. No. Jesus says, no. Man shall not live by bread alone. Now, what is he really saying? Because I really think it's more, you know, I should think that, I'm not sure exactly what I thought, but it didn't make sense once I started thinking about it. We're talking about living. What is life? Just breathing? Just eating? Or is it everything we do? Everything we think, everything we learn, all these things are mixed in with it. How we serve our God. See, that's the part to do what God wants us to do. And I got called down one time for saying it that way. Even saying expecting, because God requires of us. Because we are created in Christ Jesus unto good works, that we should walk therein. Ordained to that is required. Or if you take the point where Jesus was talking about a servant and the master. So if the master tells a servant to do something like, you know, go all day and you're going to be plowing the fields. And when you come back in, and the master now needs some food, and so does he say, you know, sit down here and I will prepare you a meal? No. He will say, fix me a meal, and after I am finished and after I'm happy, then you can fix some food for yourself. And he tells them this specifically, that when you have done everything, say, I am a profitable servant. I have only done that which I have required of you. I've only done that much. And then, like some people who disagree with Apostle Paul would like to add in my own particular way, yeah, but I haven't done everything I required of either. You know, because it's true. To live. When he's talking about, back in the second verse, he's talking about the fact that he led them. Those 40 years. Humbled them. To prove them. To know what was in their heart. Because you see, by your words, by your actions, you show what is in your heart. In this particular case, time after time after time, they did not believe God was capable of doing anything. That's probably the wrong word to use. So let me back up here. They didn't believe God would. I mean, they weren't used to this happening. And this goes all the way back to Egypt. When Moses came and he told them that they were going to be leaving. Even though that was the case. He also told them that they were going to have to suffer some, because Pharaoh would not let them go. No, not by a mighty hand. There's going to be troubles ahead. See, they needed patience. They need to let patience have her perfect work. That means continue in it unto the end. But you see, as soon as Pharaoh says, you're not going to have any more straw. As soon as some of them were beaten, some of the rulers were beaten because the tally hadn't been made. Then all of a sudden they're down on Moses, telling him, leave us alone that we may serve Pharaoh. You're making us a stink in his nostrils. This is the way it was. But they may have learned a little bit during the next plagues, because finally at the end, they were willing to save their firstborn, to do the things Moses told them they had to do for the Passover. This was required of them. And then the next day, after doing these things, roughly about 24 hours later, sun has just set, and they're walking out of their homes for the last time, being run out of the country by the Egyptians themselves. You can't stay here. Now, what is not said there, and I'm positive was there at the beginning, the pillar of fire. Because they left when it was getting dark. And they continued to walk for a period of time. They need the light, and God provides light when it's needed. It was there. Leading them. Because Moses didn't exactly know exactly the way God wanted them to go. And during the days, that would be a huge cloud over them. It was there. But then they ran out of water. Well, first of all, there's the Red Sea. Oh, you brought us out here to die. Guess what? No, he didn't. To prove them. They needed to learn to rely upon God, to do what God said. This is the part about living, doing things God's way, doing it wisely because he has described what is the wise way of doing it. And this is about living. And to prove, he was proving them what was most important. When they lacked water, did they seek the Lord or not? When they ran out of food, did they seek the Lord? See, they did not learn to rely upon God. And this is its lesson of the manna. This is why he told them. Sunday through Thursday, you are to gather a specific amount of manna. Come Friday, you are to take twice as much. Saturday, you stay in your tents. You don't come out, it won't be there. But that was what he told them. To rely upon, daily, what we need daily. I mean, we can always say, well, Lord, I want this and this and this, and such, here in the future. But what really matters is today. The wonders of God's love and how he protects us. And this was a lesson they were to learn there. How well did they learn it? Well, read the Bible and find out. But he humbled them. See, Jesus, remember one thing. I remember this very well. The thing, God gave Jesus commandment as to everything he was going to accomplish during his lifetime here. Everything. He was, because everything was lined up in wisdom. Of course it's in wisdom. Because that's how God operates. Jesus operated with wisdom. If you look at, look at how he talks to people, like the lady of Samaria, the Samaritan woman that came out in the middle of the day to get water. Look at how he talked to her. Because, she was shocked when he even spoke to her. He didn't yell at her. Calmly asked her for a drink of water. That's all. Treat her with respect. Oh my God. A Jew? Acting like this? Shock. And the little conversation ensued. But you see, and the important thing about that first verse of that fourth chapter, and that's where it was written, is the fact of the first verse. And he must needs be go through Samaria. See, he had a commandment to be there. He had an appointment with this lady at noon that day. Roughly noon. Not noon like we look at our clock, it's 12 o'clock. But, middle of the day. He had an appointment to see her. She knew about the Christ. She had been told about the Christ. But there's things she didn't know, and he was going to make sure she heard them. And by that, also make sure that other people in that village would hear it also. That was all part of the plan. He did it with them. When Jesus was before Pilate, and Pilate's getting a little bit frustrated about the fact that Jesus isn't saying very much. I mean, this wasn't normal. And I would really think in somewhat exasperated voice he would have said, "Don't you know I can have you killed or I can let you go?" Jesus, you know, in my mind I can hear him speak in a rather small, a rather soft voice. "You don't have any power." You know, you stop and think about it. Here's a ruler. When he spoke, people lived or died. But in this particular point, he didn't have any power at all. He was, you know, he was God. He knew what he needed to do that day. And so he said, "You don't have any power." That was rather shocking to Pilate, too, as far as that part's concerned. But it's about doing. We're talking about living here. We're talking about doing the will of God. It wasn't about food. It was about doing it. And as far as that's concerned, we're talking about Jesus and how he did things with wisdom. I want to go back, and this is not, because this is a part that we're all very familiar with. Back talking about in the garden. When God planted the garden, and in the midst of it there were two trees. The tree of the knowledge of good and evil and the tree of life. Those two were both in the midst, right next to each other. Now, many years ago, I made a comment about this, the fact that it'd be kind of difficult to be facing one and doing something with one without turning your back on the other. Think about that. I'm not sure whether it'd be proper to say that or not, but, you know, it's just when I'm between two trees, you know, it just seems this is the way it is. But the important thing is this, is what Jesus, what God told them when he put him in the garden. "Of all the trees of the garden, thou mayest eat freely, except for one. The tree of the knowledge of good and evil. These are good for food." The tree of life, the fruit of the tree of life is good for food. And what do we do with food? We eat it, we digest it, break it down. What do we do with the teachings of Jesus? We digest it, we chew it up, we digest it, break it down into usable parts, and then do it. That's what it's for. That's why Jesus is represented as a tree of life. Because of what it involves. Because I'm just sort of thinking, well, on the other tree, the tree of knowledge, it would probably give you a headache, heartburn, you name it. Actually, can kill you. Well, as a matter of fact, it is a poison, isn't it? "The day that thou eatest thereof, thou shalt surely die." That's a poison. We eat it anyway sometimes, don't we? But anyway, some things to think about. Because you see, what comes out of the mouth of God is what's good and true. Now, let's go back to Proverbs and see what more I have. Because I've got all kinds of things. Okay, wait a minute. Back up, excuse me. Back to Deuteronomy, 8th chapter. No, okay, I already did that. Okay, one more thing about where we were just at. And that's the fact, to put it maybe in slightly different, it's a learning experience. Matter of fact, life is a learning experience, if you actually stop and think about it. Learning what? Not how to do things because our parents did it, our grandparents, our great-grandparents did it. No, learning because God said this is the way to do it. This is where wisdom is. When we're talking about keeping sound wisdom and discretion, and maybe I'm going to be chasing rabbits here once in a while, like about right now, because I'm looking about keeping sound wisdom and instruction. But this is, you know, so far we've been talking about keeping sound wisdom. But the discretion comes in there too. Discretion refers to a plan, the proper plan. How to get a thing done. You stop and think of it. You know, it can be badly used when a man, he's not a gentleman by any stretch of the imagination, talks to a woman he's interested in or whatever, and says, I know how to be discreet. See, he knows how to plan things out so they won't get caught, is what they're saying. But you see, that's the wrong kind of discretion. That's not sound discretion. See, the word sound there is important too. But in terms of discretion, it's a matter of planning things out the right way, the wise way, one with understanding. And then we have wisdom, and then there's wisdom. And when I say there's wisdom and then there's wisdom, I'm saying there's the wisdom of man and the wisdom of God. Now, if you want to know the wisdom of man, you look at Aristotle, Plato, Pythagoras, Lot. I could name, because I've had some philosophy courses, I could name some philosophers. That's man's wisdom. The Spirit tells us, at least it's in the Scriptures. That's why they are so important. They are God's words. And there's a reason why Jesus is called the Word. Because He is the living Word. He is living out the things that God told them to do. Now, these are the important parts. But you see, that's the part about keeping them. The importance of keeping things strong, keeping things God's way, spending more time with God each day, thinking about God as we're doing our various things around the house. This is a brilliant way of doing things. The other way, you see, is because this 21st verse doesn't have the word but there in the middle, but that semicolon indicates these are similar thoughts, but they are contrasting the two of them. He said, my son, let them not depart from thine eyes. Talking about wisdom and understanding. What happens if we don't? Matter of fact, why would we? What things do we have? What benefits are in it for wisdom? If you actually start to look at it that way, that's one thing, but you see, we don't always, because we have problems which pull us. Matter of fact, it was in the book of James where it speaks, first chapter, let's go there. James chapter 1, start with verse 12. Because you see, the thing that we endure every day is exactly the same things I mentioned about Jesus in the desert. Temptations. And he says, blessed is a man that endureth temptation, for when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life, which the Lord has promised to them that love him. See, this is the right way of doing things. We will have temptations and we'll say, I don't care. I don't need that. You know, I remember meeting a little bit earlier where it speaks of God can't be tempted. What can you provide God with that he doesn't already have that's good? And that's the important thing. That's good. Now, you can find all kinds of things that aren't good, but that's not his nature. That's not something he would want for any way, shape, or form. Other than maybe to destroy with eternal fire. Oh, yeah. Well, he wouldn't necessarily enjoy that. But important thing, you can't tempt him with anything that's good. Do we get tempted by things necessarily good, or maybe not? You see, if you endure the temptation, I mean, somebody tries to get you to do this, that, the other, and says no, and you stick with it, then there are benefits. In verse 13, let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God, for God cannot be tempted with evil. Again, because that's not his nature. That he knows what that can do, and it's not the right thing. Neither tempteth he any man. That's important. He doesn't tempt us. Even though the Bible sometimes says, like Abraham was tempted by God, and telling him to offer up Isaac. I haven't really honestly looked at that particular part. But he was tried. He tried. You know, just how important, just how far are we willing to go for God? That's the question. That's where it was with Isaac. Was it important to do what God said? Or will you just do it whenever it pleases you, whenever it's convenient? I mean, this particular situation was not very convenient at all. When you talk about killing and then sacrificing your only son, your heir, and you have to be around him for several years, it doesn't work that way. Let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God. God doesn't tempt us. But every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. See, this is where our temptations come up. Oh, we think, well, maybe. But you see, and here's the thing, and here's why. When I read there in that sixth chapter of Deuteronomy, this is why it's so very important to constantly be talking about the things of God, thinking about the things of God. Then your mind's not going to be on these other things which look nice. But are they? Are they? That's another question. You see, this is when we partake. This when we allow ourselves to be drawn away from God. Well, this looks like it's nice. I mean, like in the older days, talking about idolatry. Well, these people have done this and been doing this for so many years. This looks nice. Well, it won't hurt if we do that. Yes, it will. When we're tempted because we have drawn away of what we want. Oh, this is not, yes. You know, eyes light up. But when lust is conceived, it brings forth sin. created problems for us here, folks. And yet, and even worse, just as God promised, when sin is finished, it brings forth death. Didn't I say? See, this is breaking it. This is an example of breaking it down. Remember I was talking about the fruit? You know, when you digest it, we break it down. This is what I was talking about. We're breaking it down into tiny bits that's usable. Yes, yes. If I do this, it's no. You got to say no. So this is where our problems come in. If we allow things, well, I want to, doesn't matter. What does God want? What is a wise thing to do? This is why it's necessary to keep wisdom. Because you look at it, I remember one time in, well, I was propositioned by another male student. He said something along the line, well, you know, you've never tried it. So, you know, if you tried it, you might like it. I mean, trying to entice me. I'm not interested in that. I consider what the physical situation would be and just how is that is about that part, those parts of the body designed to do that. That's the question, and what kind of damage is it will do to the body? And this is back before AIDS, so we wouldn't worry about that sort of thing, but there's a lot of things I go into that I won't. But nevertheless, no, that was not enticing at all to me. Now, some other people that might be, oh yeah, that's, no. No, you just don't do that. And here, you know, and basically, be honest with you, the theory of advertising is on the wrong side of that particular point also, because they are trying to entice you to buy their product by putting down somebody else's product. Now, while the ninth commandment says, thou shalt not bear false against thy neighbor, this is literally advertising, in many cases, bearing false witness against a product. But in doing that, they're also bearing false witness about the person who produced it. That's sin, put it bluntly. A lot of the political advertisements fit in that category too, which surprised me because I think it was South Carolina and all the evangelicals, and then when the Republican Party primary, presidential primary comes in here, the things they're saying about each other are ungodly. Democrats, well, they're not exactly angels either, are they? And even sometimes, okay, I'll be honest with you, I'm not a Republican, so I don't follow that part closely. I just happen to follow the, what I hear during the primaries. But nevertheless, the particular parts that I'm mentioning is really based on facts of what, you know, you just don't talk about other people. You don't talk about other bodies, things. And be lying about it, put it bluntly. And if you tell part of it, and that's what false witness is, you might tell part of it, but you don't tell it all. And it's not right. But then it goes on. Do not err, my brother, my loved brethren. Every good and perfect gift is from above and cometh down from the Father of lights, with whom is no variableness nor shadow of turning. See, this is where our good comes from. from the Lord our God. These are the things that we should meditate upon. These are the things that should be on our minds. But to remember always what God has for us. Now, what are reasons do we have for allowing things? What else pulls us aside in terms of the specifics of peer pressure? We're in with a group of people and they're doing things a certain way, and it might not quite be the way we know God wants us to do it, and we will let it slide. We will blend it in and that's dangerous. The example I was going to use is actually in the first chapter, and I'll just mention it. And that's the fact he's talking about, and he's talking about his son. Solomon's right there, speaking to his son, and how that it says, if someone comes to you and suggests that you come join with us, let's gather together and let's rob this guy. Let's kill him and take his things. He says, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't let others talk you into doing things. My older brother found out when apparently he may have been at least partially drunk. But they decided they would break into a house. And they got caught. Next day, one of the policemen in town came by to take him to jail and knew him quite well. And he hated to do that. But he didn't have any choice. There was a warrant out for my brother's arrest because he had let his situation get where he got involved in something he shouldn't have been. He nearly lost his eagle. He had been an Eagle Scout and nearly lost that. They were thinking seriously of taking that away from him for that very reason. But more important for his later life, he finally decided he needed to start doing something with his life and, you know, to become somebody, and so he joined the Marine Corps to do that. Within 3 years, he was a full corporal. It would have been about 4 or 5 more years, actually maybe 8 years, before he could be elevated to sergeant. I mean, it's kind of difficult to advance once you get to corporal. But you see, because of his intelligence and some of the testing that he had done on him, as well as other recruits, they were willing to send him to college. Set him up as an officer. There was only one thing that held it back. Somebody forgot to change the record that went to the FBI over this breaking and entering. It was listed as a felony. It was reduced to a misdemeanor. But you see, when that popped up on his security clearance, he lost all the potential of going up many levels. He probably would have been at least a colonel or even a general in the Marine Corps. He could have been somebody. But that stopped it right there. You don't allow others to influence you. It's not a good idea. I want to go to Matthew, the fifth chapter, verses 21 and 22. Now we're getting into really tough things. Because this is one of the ways that we can be influenced without our real knowledge of it. It's called anger. If we get angry at things, we stop thinking clearly, which means we don't use wisdom. And the 21st verse begins with, "Ye have heard that it was said by them of old time, Thou shalt not kill, and whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment." That was under the law. This is a situation where two people out, for instance, they were out chopping wood. And one of their axe heads, he's swinging the axe and the axe, it slides off of the handle and hits and kills the other one. Situations like that where it was an accident. By all rights, that man's blood was to be taken. His life would be taken by the closest relative of the person who was killed. That was the law. But in situations like this where it was not on purpose, they had six cities, three on the east side and three on the west side of the Jordan River. And they could flee there and seek refuge. And they'd be granted refuge until the slayer of blood would appear and demand to have the man back. And then the trial would be held. If it could be proven that it was an accident that ended it, as far as a slayer was concerned, he was not allowed to touch him as long as the man stayed within the bounds of the city. But the man did not get off scot-free because he was to remain there within the city walls until the death of the high priest. However long that was, that's how long they had to stay. If they journeyed outside of it and the slayer of blood caught him and killed him, that was justified. He was supposed to stay inside. But once the high priest said, he was free to go. That's how serious this was. Now verse 22, because it's text right in there. "But I say unto you that whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. And whosoever shall say to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council, but whosoever shall say, Thou fool, shall be in danger of hellfire." See, each one of these things, he breaks it down into three categories. But the point is, when we are angry without a cause against somebody, we're in the exact serious situation as if we killed somebody under the law. Is that dangerous? Is that serious? Now, we probably need to define a little bit what a cause is. There must be a reason. There must be a reason. You've got to do things because there's a reason. And if someone harms you, you have a reason to be angry. But if someone tells you that so-and-so did so-and-so and you get angry at that person hasn't harmed you. That's without a cause. This is the part we need to watch. We don't always know. It doesn't make any difference. So what if so-and-so said so-and-so? I remember along that line, actually this was a Democrat. I got a call right before primary. If you knew that so-and-so had done so-and-so, would that change your vote? That's basically what I heard on the telephone. Actually, it would. I would not vote for the person who paid the person to make that call. Because that's bearing false witness. You know, I can get a little bit ticked off on things like that. But you see, that was directly, she was implying that I could be, my vote could be changed by enticement. By thinking, oh, if he did it, no. Whether he did it or not. And one thing I've learned about forgiveness, and that's the fact that it is more important about forgiveness than what we may know. I remember, I'm glad none of you read my first version of my autobiography. Because I said some horrible things about my parents, about my former fiancé. And I was going to send that to my niece because she's the one that asked me to write it. I was ready to do that within the next month and a half. But I was speaking of my former fiancé to teach me about the lessons of mercy. And this is mercy instead of being angry at somebody without a cause. He sent me to her, he sent her to me. Remember, I live right outside the West Town Mall. And we met at Belk's there within the mall. She was living in Nashville, but she needed to come back to bring her grandchildren to see a dentist. They used to be living here. They had gotten along well with the dentist. And so she thought it would be better to just bring him back to Knoxville rather than get a new dentist and maybe have all kinds. Because the children were somewhat emotional, with some emotional problems. They could cause, be a lot of problems. And they already had established. But you see, God decided, I need to learn a lesson. And so I got this email saying, we're going to be in town tomorrow. Could we meet? I had no idea why or whatever. But I also know from the Bible that I'm not to say no on things like that. So I says, okay. And the first thing that came out of her mouth, she was apologizing to me for all the things she did. She didn't even, and admitted, she didn't even know all the things that she may have caused me harm. Now what do I do in that case like that? What would Jesus do? You forgive. I learned what mercy meant. Now, I still get angry, but I still have learned how to back off. And those who have read it, you know that the very first of the book was talking about my parents, but not in the negative way that I originally was, but I was explaining things, the fact that they didn't know. They didn't know. Now, I might also say that maybe they didn't read. So the very first thing I read in the sixth chapter of Deuteronomy about speaking things, of what to do. Because it's talking about teaching your children. And it's there. So it doesn't matter. See, I told you I wasn't going to get through. Anyway, but here, this is just a few more minutes. Just hang in there. Instead of being angry with a cause, the wise way is to forgive, to understand where they're coming from. And that's not always easy. I know, because sometimes I get ticked off. But you see, what I learned was the fact when God taught me mercy, He also allowed me to go back and make, well, the first thing I realized I had to do, if I'm forgiving her, I can't leave that in writing. And so I had to rewrite the whole, I'm going to have to at least rewrite that part. And as soon as I thought about that, I started looking through the first part of the book, actually one file. And there was all these nasty things I said about my parents. I couldn't write that about them either. And so they got forgiven. And I realized, hey, I didn't have any right to be that angry. Yes, they should have done better. They could have done better. But you see, I'm a sinner. What right do I have to accuse of doing things? You know, I'm no better. Turns out later in life I was continuing to do some of the things I was mad at them about for doing. It just don't work that way, but that's how we work. We just forgive. And so I rewrote that whole thing. And then as I started writing these things, even more memories came back, and I kept writing and kept writing and writing. And the part, especially the part during my years between birth and when I graduated from high school, there's all kinds of things I listed in there I didn't realize I'd ever done. And the blessing of the Lord that were there. And since then I've realized that there are many times during the mornings, like when I was on my paper, I was with God. Wonders. Oh, man. And you wonder why I'm rather positive thinking, I guess people say. It doesn't make, I don't care what people say about it anyway. I know that God loves me. As I can't deny it. It's all there in black and white. It's all those in pictures. It's all there. I love you, God says. His rich mercy. I don't understand why. Perhaps I will one of these days. The only thing I know is I really enjoy it. And I'm willing to do things for Him. And that's what counts. And with that, we will close.